The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning. How are you doing?
Okay, tov, chodesh tov. Yeah, end of the week, so it's always a good sign for us, Howard. Thank you.
And having gone through the week, yes.
Well, we have got through the week, yeah, another week. Been a tough week in Israel, and of course, there are a few tough weeks still left ahead of us until we finally get through this particular situation. But I was interested in the announcement by Mike Pompeo. He did this interview with an Israeli newspaper, and he claims that the U.S. administration's recognition of communities in Judea and Samaria, Israeli communities in Judea and Samaria, actually promotes peace. He thinks that it's a step towards trying to get this peace arrangement finally buttoned down. And it kind of sounds like a contradiction in terms. But I really can see where he's come from, because I think that once it becomes clear to both parties that that's what's going to happen, and by the way, there has been so much discussion about the fact that those settlements anyway will form part of Israel in the fullness of time. So even though it seems contradictory, I think I can sort of understand it. Anyway, it might be an interesting discussion for another day when we have a little bit more time to think about it.
Yeah, really, it is indeed very, very interesting. Defense Minister Naftali Bennett has decided to implement a new policy that's going to prevent the return of the body of any terrorists held by Israel. What is the significance of this policy?
So this is really all about the two Israeli soldiers plus the other two Israeli individuals who are somewhere in Gaza. We've got Hadar Goldin and Oron Shaul, whose bodies are still being held by Hamas following the 2014 Operation Protective Edge. And this announcement is really all about them, because all the time that terrorist organizations, whoever they happen to be, all the time that they know that Israel will simply return the bodies of their individuals who may be killed in operations and be held by Israel, doesn't give them any incentive at all to enter into an arrangement to return the bodies of Israeli soldiers or to return those two individuals who have disappeared somewhere in Gaza. And so I think that this is really all about them. It's about Hadar Goldin, it's about Oron Shaul, it's about Averik Mengistu, and it's about Hisham al-Sayed, all of them. We are still waiting to hear about how they will be repatriated to Israel. And of course, the idea of body swaps or individual swaps is always on the table. But Israel has, up until now, slowly but surely returned the bodies of terrorists who have been killed in operations, in spite of the fact that the Hamas government in Gaza has not been prepared to do the risks, to do the same for those bodies of the Israeli soldiers held by them. And so this is a very, very strong message that's been sent to the families of those four individuals to show a much more serious intention, I think, about punishing, if that's the right word, those terrorist organizations whose individuals' bodies are held by Israel, punishing them until such time as they may be prepared to enter into an arrangement whereby there will be a swap. Of course, this whole issue of swaps is controversial within itself, because as we saw, for example, with the Gilad Shalit exchange deal, huge numbers of people were exchanged in return for Gilad Shalit. Many of them went back to terror attacks even after they were released and repatriated to Gaza, wherever they were sent back to. This has created a lot of consternation as to whether we don't encourage terror organizations to try to keep bodies, to try to keep individuals, because they know that there is an exchange deal in the offing, and so therefore this comes as some sort of value to them. And of course, the value we saw in the Gilad Shalit deal was huge from their perspective, where hundreds of people were released, repatriated in exchange for one Israeli individual. So, highly controversial. Hadar Goldin's parents have said that in fact this public statement is welcome, even though the Israeli government had assured the Goldin family already some time ago that this was in any event the policy. So they claim that this is nothing new in terms of actually implementing the policy on the ground, but the fact that they're making it public shows a much greater intent on the part of the Israeli government. And of course, this is a newly appointed defense minister, Naftali Bennett, who's doing so. But it's interesting that we've been waiting 5 years now for the bodies of those two soldiers to be returned, and almost a similar time for the other two individuals, both of whom we understand are somewhat handicapped, and that they went into Gaza of their own volition, and we have no idea what's happened to them after that. So, you know, Israel is obviously very eager to get back not only the two bodies, but in fact the two individuals as well.
Yeah, interesting, and obviously very controversial, because it's a very emotive type of a subject when you're dealing with somebody's remains. All Yasur helicopters in the Israeli Air Force have now been grounded. That was after one of the helicopters caught fire and crashed. Just tell us a little bit more about this accident.
So this was an incident that took place on Tuesday night. A Yasur helicopter, that's the Hebrew name that's given to Sikorsky helicopters that are still being run by the Israeli Air Force, even though they are somewhat aged these days. They're not certainly of the newest type of helicopter that one can get, and they've done many, many years of service in the Israeli Air Force. But there was an incident on Tuesday night when this helicopter suddenly caught fire while it was flying along. Fortunately, it wasn't too far above the ground, and the pilot was able to land very, very quickly and managed to let the three crewmen and 11 special forces soldiers who were on board escape without any injury. But it was a kind of a crash landing, and the whole helicopter burnt out as a result of the fire that ensued. It's understood that the fire actually originated from the engine area, even though we are told that the engine was a relatively new engine, and there was absolutely no reason why the fire would break out. There was no overweight combat equipment on the helicopter or anything that might have caused any strain to the engine. So as a result of that, the Air Force has decided to ground all of these Sikorsky Yasur helicopters and to examine whether the rest of the fleet might not also be susceptible to such an accident happening. And of course, if that is the case, either to take preventative action or potentially even to retire the fleet of Yasur helicopters, given that they are somewhat aged. There is apparently a program already in place looking at the possibility of replacing the Yasur helicopter candidates that are being looked at, include the Lockheed Martin, what they're calling the Super Yasur, and also a dual-rotor Boeing Chinook helicopters being looked at as a possible replacement. So there is still some work that's going on at the moment in order to try to determine what the Air Force will need to do about their fleet of helicopters. But at the moment, unfortunately, all of those Yasur helicopters are grounded. And of course, it does impede the ability of the Army to move around quickly. And helicopters are used very frequently in battle, but also in training, to allow those, especially special forces, to move around very effectively and to get to their locations. So this is a serious incident. And of course, we all remember the 1997 collision that took place, two helicopters also, of the Yasur type, crashed. 73 Israeli soldiers were killed, near the Lebanese border in that particularly deadly air accident. I think they're probably the deadliest one in Israel's history. So we'll have to just see what the Air Force is going to decide about these Yasurs. But in the meantime, unfortunately, their ability to operate is clearly impeded while these helicopters remain on the ground.
Right, crazy. This is a very, very interesting story. I saw it, and I was wondering how Israel is managing to achieve this. A delegation of journalists from Iraq, Saudi Arabia, and Kuwait have visited Israel. How was this visit received?
Well, from an Israeli point of view, this is not something which is unusual and is certainly very welcome. And we do see from time to time delegations of journalists from Arab countries, including countries with which Israel doesn't have any diplomatic relations at all, come along to Israel because the foreign ministry is working constantly to attract people like this who are prepared to come and view things for themselves rather than to have to rely upon foreign media and TV reports and negative public relations that Israel is forced to endure. They are invited to come along and witness things for themselves. And there are would you believe, some quite forward-thinking journalists, even in these Arab countries, although for them, it's potentially very difficult because they might not be well received. We've seen in the past some outspoken journalists who've been, Arab journalists who've been supportive of Israel's position have really suffered, at the hands of their fellow countrymen, and others are talking particularly about, one individual who visited recently, and in the most part, these journalists who come here wish to be anonymous. They don't wish their names to be publicized. But one individual, a Saudi blogger by the name of Mahmoud Saud, was actually willing to be identified and go public, and he came to Israel, and he was really jeered and cursed and spat upon by Palestinians when he visited the Temple Mount and other places. They recognized him, and they really castigated him because of his pro-Israel stance within the Arab media. So Israel continues to work behind the scenes, and on this occasion, these five journalists came along from Kuwait and from Saudi Arabia and from Iraq, and those countries are interesting within themselves because, for example, within Saudi Arabia, Israel seems to be managing to somehow rehabilitate its position within that society. The Saudi people seem to be a little bit more open to the idea of developing relations with Israel, certainly at an intergovernmental level, even though diplomatic relations don't exist, but there seems to be a lot of cooperation at the government level. Kuwait, not so much. Iraq, also not so much. The report does say that there were also two musicians from Iraq who joined this delegation. I'm not quite sure what the relevance of that is, perhaps them keeping things happy along the way. But apparently, this delegation really was impressed by what they saw here. Surprised is even the word that some people use to say, you know, the reality that of things that they see on the ground somehow is entirely different from what their expectations are. And these individuals were allowed to meet with a foreign minister and other foreign ministry officials. They were allowed to meet with Knesset members at Jerusalem and Tel Aviv and other parts of the country. And, you know, it's interesting to see whether they would be willing to go back to their own countries now and write a little bit more positively about their experiences and about the things that they found on the ground here, rather than perpetuating the age-old hatred that we've seen being so prevalent in these countries, particularly the Arab countries around the world. So slowly but surely, using a program of trying to attract journalists of this type, Israel is working to rehabilitate her name in the international community against the sea of hate. And to be fair, we've seen delegations from South Africa as well come along, some with a very, very anti-view, but that's the risk that you take, right? People come along here in order to...
So that's 100%, and that's why, you know, I believe in this whole thing of go and see for yourself. You might not like everything. In fact, you might come back with exactly the same view. I doubt it, because often, you know, the untruth has been the lead part of the story. But go and see it. Go and see and make up your own mind. And,
no, I absolutely agree with that. I think there's a lot to see and there's a lot to be impressed by. And you know, like any country, there are problems here. And, you know, there's no need for us to try to hide them away. They are what they are. And being a normal country in the international community, one would expect that.
Yeah.
But at least dispel the myths.
Yes.
At least get rid of the untruths. At least get, you know, separate out between what's real and what's not real.
Although, Anthony, just to interrupt you, the cynic in me also, however, says that a part of this connection that Israel is starting to develop with these countries is also because the Middle East outside of Israel is severely divided between Iran and Qatar versus the Saudi Arabia, Iraq, etc. This also makes it a little bit easier, you know, enemy of your enemy is my friend, for Israel and these countries to establish stronger ties.
I think that's absolutely true. Although, having said that, you know, the Muslim world has always been divided along the Shia-Sunni line, and we're seeing that even further emphasized right now. And the only difference between what we're seeing now and what happened previously with regard to that particular divide is that they hated Israel jointly more than they hated each other. But that view of Israel is being tempered slightly because all of a sudden they see Israel as being a possible ally to try and harden and to promote their own positions against the other Muslim groups. And of course, with Iran behaving in the way that it is, not only towards Israel and the West, but also indeed towards other Muslim countries who don't quite follow the same path as they do. Countries like Saudi Arabia are certainly feeling challenged and threatened, and Israel could potentially help them. So it's an interesting pairing that we see developing.
Indeed, it is 8 o'clock. Anthony Rach, thank you. As always, hope you have a great weekend, a Shabbat Shalom, and we will speak to you on Monday.